This is Space Cats Peace Turtles, the unofficial podcast for Fantasy Flight's Twilight Imperium.
Episode 63, 2018 Holiday Spectacular.
Music by Ben Prunty, featuring Matt Martins and Hunter Donaldson.
Holy moly.
No swearing.
I'm not. No swearing. How dare you? It is 11:49.
I just spent 12 and a half hours swearing.
It is December 23rd, 2018, and mm-hmm. we just streamed Twilight Imperium for 13 hours.
Yep.
Hunter Donaldson?
That's me.
How do you feel?
Awful.
Yeah, me too.
It was not good.
We are also
joined... Don't watch this. And you know what? Quit listening to this show.
We're joined by one of our players, Sean O'Connor.
Hello.
We're joined by Chris Rogers.
Hello.
And we're joined by EJ Sanders.
Hello.
Hey, so we're gonna go to sleep here soon, because we're all dead people. But before we do that, we thought we'd ruminate on the games we just played.
Let's recap
or the game we played, and then the social experiment we endured. Let's start with the game, because that's more fun. We played a six-player game on the map, on our map. Tournament rules. Let's list off our factions. Oh, we should note, Connor played too, and just like last year, Connor's not in this episode. He had to dart. But Connor played as the L1Z1X in game one. I was the Yin Brotherhood in Darien Slice.
I was the Ghost of Krius in Slice of the Gashlight.
I was the Mintak Coalition.
In Big and Tight.
Big and Tight?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where I was.
Yeah.
But I was the Arborek.
In Fast and Cultured.
Dangerous
Diplo.
Dangerous Diplo.
No, I was in Dangerous Diplo.
Okay. Must have been Fast and Cultured.
Boy, see, we've endured another game of TI, so we've forgotten a lot of the
Dangerous
specifics.
Dangerous Diplo. He was in the small
Little and Tight? What were you in? What were you
in? I was in Dangerous Diplo. Connor was
as
the one
you
who
were.
I was in Dangerous Diplo.
As who?
As the...
Who did EJ play in game one?
Oh, man.
None of us remember. This is what we've done.
Okay.
Oh, Isarl, the...
Yeah.
And Connor was...
L1Z1.
In which slice, though?
In
Fast
the,
and Cultured. Got
Fast
it.
And Cultured.
All right, so there's your breakup.
Yeah.
Breakdown. Oof.
What a breakdown.
Gonna die.
Oof.
Oof. What, let's... If you want to watch the stream, it'll be on YouTube. And from here on out, spoilers. Spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to... If you want to watch it before you listen... Get out now. Get out. Quick, before it's too late. Hunter won.
Yeah. Just destroyed it.
Yeah. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll talk about it. So it was like kind of the type of win that we've called out several times before as far as this map, which is that I went unchallenged. My neighbor, EJ, playing as Isarl in Dangerous Diplo, was getting a lot of heat thrown at him from
all
you,
of,
Matt.
All of the heat.
Yeah, lots of heat.
All of it.
And for that reason, I was able to kind of make things pretty cool between me and him.
Yep.
I, very early on, my other neighbor was Chris, playing as the Arborek, and I very early on was able to just kind of surgically remove one of Chris's carriers, which for Arborek, I think, kind of slowed him down quite a bit.
Yeah, it crushed him pretty bad.
I don't know if it crushed him, but his mid game was slower and weirder than it
was.
Well,
and he had a round one that hurt too, so he had a beginning and a middle that were hard. Chris, tell me how your game felt.
Yeah, I tend to have like an early game that feels too slow, and this time the mid game, even though it was slow,
mm-hmm.
kind of didn't feel too bad to me because I was kind of focused on Mechatol.
I just know that for me, both of my neighbors were not a check
right.
on me in any way.
No,
that
was
a problem.
We had some empty space that mm-hmm. A little way through, you put a couple fighters in just to make it awkward mm-hmm. for me to get through.
And Hunter, you brought that up at the end of the game mm-hmm. immediately when we were done, is that you found a moment where you saw that EJ was getting the heat. And you were like, you know, I always forget to make fighter walls.
Right.
You had fighter two, and you just spent like two rounds building up this little wall because you knew as soon as people realized that you were the target, it would be too late.
So I very specifically gummed up the works. And I also think maybe saying that you had a slow mid-game is misleading, because I actually think what it might have been is that when you have one of your neighbors is kind of needing to be your friend because they're getting so much heat from other people,
right.
And then your other neighbor is Arborek and going specifically for Mechatol Rex, then who is going to
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, he wasn't really going to go for you anyways, because Chris's goal was Imperial, Mechatol,
right.
And find other points elsewhere.
I think
when they were convenient.
We should probably segue to what happened to Matt, because that kind of leads up to why I went to Mechatol. Mechatol kind of opened up, and it became like kind of a dumb move for me to not take it.
Right. So I was Yin.
And that changed my game.
And I was Yin, and I was in Darien Slice, which was immediately just like, Hunter and I know that that's ideally pretty good. That should be a good thing for Darien, for the Yin. So he was calling it out, and he kind of got targets thrown at me just in general. Like, I was feeling
like I was annoyed that I was just annoyed to be playing against you again with you playing as Yin.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's just been so many times. It's been a time too much.
I felt like I did my job. I stepped in. I was supposed to keep Matt in check.
Well, more than that, though, Sean O'Connor came and invaded my... Sean basically blocked me from getting... I was going to get around 2 transit diodes, and Sean blocked it 3 rounds in a row.
That's one of the things about Darien Slice that's so good.
Right.
As having that yellow skip as Yin is so cool.
Right. I was going to do the Mechatol transit diodes. That's mine forever. There's nothing you can do about it. And then I'm going to just protect the rest of my slice and do whatever. But Sean took well in before I could get it. And then it just, like, things started crumbling very quickly. And I had to back off of Mechatol.
I wanted to give credit to... I can't remember his name. Was it Trent? Well, Trevor? Trevor. The guy that did that, the first time we saw someone playing Yin and got transit diodes early and had a yellow skip, and we were just like, oh, that's the thing.
Right.
Just wanted to quick shout out to that guy.
Because I hadn't thought of it.
Well, that's the strategy now.
It is the strategy now. Yeah. It's the best. But I... then spent the next many rounds trying to do something, and something would fail every single time. And almost every time it was because EJ Sanders was the Isarl Tribes, and he would have an action card to stop me. And the one time I tried to make him lose all those action cards, it backfired in my face.
Let's talk about that moment, because that was insane.
It was the best moment of the game.
It's the biggest mistake I've made in a game of Twilight Imperium ever. It's definitely the biggest mistake.
Yeah, so what did you do? Tell him.
I was speaker, and I, in my looking through the agenda deck, pulled out public execution, which is where you can make someone lose all of their action cards, and if they happen to be the speaker, it passes the speaker token to the left, which means they'll pick last. And I just taken politics, and I was looking at that, and for some reason, I blindsided myself to the fact that
I would also get picked. Yeah,
because I was like, at this point, EJ had like 11 or 12 action cards. And I just knew I wanted that on top because I was putting something else underneath it that was going to be juicier, and I wanted everyone to burn their votes. I knew public execution would get a lot of votes.
Right.
And so I wanted that to happen. But I just forgot that, of course, I would be the main other person that would get targeted by that, which was it's a huge blunder. It's truly just like a stupid thing. Like if for people in the stream, they were like, what is Matt? That is the dumbest play I've ever seen. It's a bad play.
Your credit, you realized right away that it was you were reading it, you were like, oh, wait,
I'm an idiot.
Missed something.
And then it became so much wheeling and dealing. And somehow EJ just always had more to offer people, which blew me. I didn't understand it, because we would be offering the same thing. But I guess actually this isn't surprising, because he can offer the exact same thing. And part of that offer is that you're also going to get one step closer in speaker order. You're going to move up in speaker order if you pick me.
Yeah.
So you get EJ's thing, which is what I'm offering you, and you move up in speaker order. But I was frustrated because for most of the game, it looked like EJ was running away with it, because he had all the action cards. He had a solid slice. He's not. He's shaking his head in disagreement. Go ahead.
I don't think the moment whenever that was happening, I knew that at some point when we were going around the table, support for the throne was going to come out. I didn't want to offer it earlier to Hunter. I thought I had a pretty good idea.
I loved your offer. It was so great.
Well, I always hate being in that situation. Hunter was the first person we would have to sway, and I was like, well, I have 3 more people to sway. I cannot give my big stuff to Hunter. I basically couldn't make Hunter a deal. I couldn't think of a deal that would work. I should have just started throwing stuff at him.
I think if you had made the same offer that he made.
I don't know what he made.
It was a trade agreement.
But my trade agreement was only worth two. I don't think he would have taken it.
I don't know. I might have.
I didn't think to make the offer because I was just like, I have nothing. I can't give stuff to Hunter because I need ammunition for these other folks.
I took advantage of the fact that Hunter, I knew that Hunter needed that as well.
Right. The thing about that in general, though, the way that all went down, is that actually, kind of in my heart, I thought it was still going to happen to you, EJ. Like, I thought...
You weren't going to get stuff, and then...
See, I was like, I'm going to get this trade agreement,
and then he's still
going to get executed.
Yep.
It was genuinely surprising that Connor didn't want to hear me out. Connor's the one who ended up being the final votes, and he had no interest in
taking it. That's where the meta came in. It honestly, that's exactly where the meta came in. All I had to do was shrug at Connor and be like,
come on.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, and I, even though I was.
Was I on Mechatol for that? That was the first. Yeah, that was the first agenda. So I was still on Mechatol at that point, too.
Yeah,
and
that's what
everyone was.
Too.
Everyone was looking down the barrel of Matt's got speaker token. He's on Mechatol. He's in the slice he wanted. Like,
yeah. A lot of things have been going right for you.
Right. There were a lot of things that I had. And so it just was like, yeah, kill Matt. And it really crushed my
game.
Yeah,
it was devastating.
I struggled to get command counters for a while. And then what was the second thing that completely... Oh, actually, it wasn't a second thing. It was just every time I needed to do anything, EJ had an action card to stop it.
Parlay.
He had Parlay, which was huge.
That was great.
You had a lot. Let's talk about some more bad stuff.
That Parlay was so tasty.
I kind of like felt like it was going to happen. But I was like, surely he doesn't care about Zobat. Surely Parlay doesn't need to come out for stupid Zobat. Nope, it did. Sean, tell me about your terrible game.
It was... a lot of bad stuff happened. I wouldn't count it as a terrible game, though.
No, but you got dunked on harder than I did.
Yeah,
we're talking a lot right now about how hard my game went, but Sean O'Connor round the second agenda.
Yeah, the very next thing that came out.
After public execution.
Yeah, my second but I mean I the second round I got when I nabbed Imperial, I didn't think that was going to end up well.
Yeah.
And then I ended up coming out of that with, like, I think by round three, I had, like, 3 points.
Yeah.
On the
board.
Yeah,
let's talk about...
Like, your board position got bad, but where you were victory point-wise got bad.
Yeah. So let's talk about what happened to him. It was the wormhole nukes that come out. I forget the exact name of that agenda, but the agenda that blows up all the ships in wormholes.
In place
and
attack.
For Hunter, it was 4 fighters, and for EJ,
really lucky with that. Yeah. Honestly,
EJ, you lost a cruiser and a destroyer.
Yeah, not much.
And Sean lost almost his entire fleet. You were left with like 2 ships left.
It was everything. I think I had I think after that, I had a carrier
and 1 cruiser
and 2 guys down adjacent to my home, and then I had like a destroyer somewhere.
Right. He had very little, and he had to spend the next 2 rounds just like crawling back. And he had a little fleet that was in my slice, and I had to take that out immediately. So he was very, and then Lizix was digging into his slice, and by the end of round 2, he had like 2 planets and just nothing to his name.
I did a little bit of it to myself because I trusted Connor not to come into my pie slice.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, I can't do that.
Yeah, I know. And I had the worst part of it is I had the tools to stop him, and I just was like, well, I might need it later, so I'm going to try trusting him. And he didn't even come in with that much. It's just that point where you're like, you don't have enough to both keep moving forward and take care of just a small little problem, but it's like right next to your home.
Yeah.
Slice, and it ends up stopping you from being able to do
a lot,
almost anything from your home planet.
So it didn't look like we were coming down to the end of the game until the round that we actually called the game early. We called it with Hunter at 8 points with a surefire path to victory.
With the unit upgrade in my pocket.
Right.
And the works completely gummed.
Right. And there was, so we didn't play the last round out because we just knew it was over. But that round that got Hunter 2-8, what was your point jump? 3 points? 4 points? You claimed the stage 2 objective that was there.
Yeah, I claimed a stage 2 and a secret. I think that's...
So just 3.
I was just like in the pack.
Right.
And then I was able to get a stage 2 that nobody else was able to get.
Right. And how did you get that stage 2? Walk me. I actually genuinely want you to walk me through because you took trade
twice in a row. So I took trade because I'd gotten, your trade agreement from the public execution thing.
Right.
So I'd gotten that, and then I was like, well, I'll take trade because I've got this trade agreement. And so I was able to do kind of pretty efficient trading because I just had EJ's.
And you were the only faction on the board with four commodities, so you had the most trading power anyways.
Right.
Not that this was a very trade-heavy game.
It wasn't, besides that one objective.
Shut it down a lot, and that was the only time, yeah.
Yeah. I think there was eight influence was out on the board as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, besides that, though, trade goods were not very useful for victory points. But because I had taken trade the round before that was revealed, I already had a little bank.
Yeah.
And I always have a policy now of, like, just keep some there because you never know what's going to come out.
Right.
And it came out, and it was like when it came out, I was in striking distance of it basically. Mm-hmm.
Didn't you have two trade agreements or was it just EJ's? I thought you got a second one. Or did you just trade with
someone? No, I got EJ's twice because what happened was because the second time I got trade, I was already close enough to where I actually didn't need anyone to trade with me in order to score the point. And I just called that out to people and then was able to get them to trade. Because I was like, listen, like I'm getting the point already.
Right.
The first time it was for his votes. The second time
was for my promissory note that I gave Hunter. Well, that is part of the deal.
It might have, no, that was part of a different deal, I think. But
at one point I gave Hunter Greyfire Mutagen, and at some point that became EJ's.
So,
and that's another way EJ screwed me over.
I do think we did. See, the thing is, I did.
No, the trade agreement was for you blocking on Beta Wormhole.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It was for that.
He was protecting you against Sean, who was making it very clear he was going to jump into
my slice. I had no clue where, and that's all I wanted to do was slow.
So you paid him to get that decision.
See, that's the thing is like that. Like whenever you put so much pressure on one player,
like I couldn't.
They'll make lots of deals.
And so what Hunter did was capitalize on that and was just like, I'm always going to be there for the deal.
Right.
And that's what you do on this map. Like for those of you about to play in this tournament, it has proven time and time again, be the political person who offers people the right deals at the right times.
Yeah.
And don't give people a reason to attack you. Find a way to pay yourself out of it because that's how you win on this map.
Also, I just really like Slice of the Gashlight.
It is very good. It is the best slice.
I'm a little bit worried that like when the tournament starts that it's gonna be like, that's clearly the best slice.
But my argument continues to be like the players need to know that and play against it.
Right.
If the first person every single game is gonna pick Slice of the Gashlight, like you need to make sure there's not going to be good factions left over for them to pick.
I just think there are, like, basically any faction that has an issue with command counters, which I think there are quite a few that is their Achilles heel.
Right.
If they have Slice of the Gashlight, that is not going to be an issue.
Right.
And so, like, Ghost, for me, I never liked to play Ghost because I would see how your games would go, and I don't like it when command counters is the main issue. And I always felt like every time you would have a bad Ghost game, it was basically because the command counters didn't work out.
Same with Yin. I mean, usually my bad Yin games are because I have a command counter problem, which was happening in this game because Darien Slices, if you are Yin, that's the kickback of Darien Slice. For a normal player, you've got a 1-2, a 1-2, and a 0-2. That's 6 influence. Great.
Right.
I get a pretty cheap 2 command counters. For Yin, I want to use my 2 influences, so I end up getting very few command counters because I'm not buying very many off of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that was another one of my... Every game where I don't get very many command counters, I feel like that's when I do pretty bad.
Yeah. And I want to say I'm sorry that if I disappointed anybody for not going for War Sense.
So anybody have anything else about that game? Anything? Or do we want
to
jump into
that we need to call out?
Let's for Connor's sake, let's speak on behalf of Connor. How was his game?
I liked it.
L1. I don't remember much about it, but he was on the opposite side of the map.
He had a lot of the map. He had some territory.
Yeah, he spread out into Sean's stuff.
Yeah, and both of his neighbors. He kept them both in check. He did a really good job. He just
honestly hard for me to remember why he didn't win because like
I think he wasn't quite able to get the points.
Yeah, like, it wasn't set up to get points.
Objectives didn't line up. They were tech objectives.
Yeah, that's true. They were kind of more passive. Mm-hmm. And if they had been control objectives, he would have had
it. Running away with it, yeah.
I stayed in my slice most of that game. I think I had like one of your planets, Chris, and then I gave it and then ended up giving it back. And then after that, I never took another planet from anybody.
When the game ended, we were trying to math it out, and me and Connor were the only people in reach.
Right.
And when we were looking at it, Connor was the only one with a legitimate shot because right. he didn't have people all up in his stuff.
Right.
Yeah, he
right.
had a lot of territory. He was having a very, very aggressive game. It looked right. like he was having a really fun game, actually.
Yeah. Chris, mm-hmm. Chris, how did you feel about Connor?
Yeah, you were the one that fought him most.
Yeah, I feel like we had just the one big conflict that did kind of mess me up because as L1, he took control of two of my PDS.
Yeah, he assimilated two of your PDS.
Yeah.
And so that was right next to Mechatol, which kind of made my next moves awkward, but it was late enough in the game that it ended up not mattering so much. It just kept me behind. It kept me out of the pack a little bit.
That's one other weird point to bring up about this map. How quickly there were so many shots adjacent to Mechatol. Like, if you invaded Mechatol Rex, it was like six shots
yep.
by like round two or three. Like, round three, I guess, is what it would have been. Like, it became really dangerous for anybody to mess with anything in or around Mechatol Rex.
I think the Mechatol Rex factions that play in the tournament are going to need to get there as fast as possible and get set
and
up.
Defend themselves
like,
really
it's
quickly.
Like, it's I'm kind of worried tough. About Arborek for that reason because yeah. I don't know how you're going to get there fast enough to then be able to start
yep.
dumping the ground for it. Like, I don't know. I wonder how that would have turned out for you, for Chris, if you hadn't been kicked out so thoroughly.
Right.
Because, I don't know.
I think you either get there really fast or you need to only spend your first two rounds amassing a huge fleet where you plant. Like, if you're going to take Mechatol Rex and you know you want that to be your last three or four round strategy, you need to start working on it round one and two
mm-hmm.
of building up the fleet that will eventually take Mechatol.
Yeah.
Because you're going to need that. You're going to need a lot of stuff to take it because someone else is going to get it first. But if you want to be the one that sits on Mechatol all game and gets a couple Imperial points off of it, you need to move in with some stuff.
How do you take that target off your back? Because
yeah, I don't know. Me taking that 1 point. I was blocking. My whole thing with taking it was Sean had Imperial that round, and I was like, I feel like I'm doing people a favor of just not letting Sean be the one to take Mechatol mm-hmm. and get an Imperial point, two free points off of it.
I don't think
but
I could have.
I took it and was immediately just like, nah, you shouldn't have taken that point. It's a free point. Free point's a free point. And I was yin. I mean, I get that that's. So I don't know how you get the target off. Depends on who it is.
I actually like that best about your tournament map because it is so central to the game, Mechatol. In a lot of cases, when you play like a standard game of Twilight Imperium where there's a map build and a competitive build, there's a lot of chances, you know, a lot of races don't have a whole lot of chance to take. And this map really allows for a lot of competitive balance right in the center.
Right.
And it makes it scary to hold Mechatol and like a ballsy move, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's the saving grace of it in terms of conflict.
Right.
The conflict is more internal
yeah,
than it
right.
is it's, external. Yeah. You got to figure out what you're going to do and hope for some really lucky objectives to get going.
Right.
I think the moral of that game in general, and then I think something that people need to be thinking about going into the tournament is that you need to be looking at what people are going to be able to score. It's
yeah.
super,
you
super
really,
important.
Yeah, you cannot put the blinders on. You can't, yeah. you just cannot only think about your own objectives. And that's why it sucks. I haven't found the right way to do this, and I hate it because all I ever do is I sit there and I complain about EJ's got some kind of lead.
Right.
And I just wish people would be attacking EJ more. And like, Hunter
and then I
did.
Have like 10 trade goods on the sheet.
Yeah.
You know
you
what
have
I mean?
To look
I'm not
at
hiding
every,
them.
Right.
They're there.
You have to look at everyone's stuff.
I tried to divert
and you have
attention.
To, you have to, yeah, divert attention from yourself. But like the main point is I do not think it's enough. I feel like maybe in TI3 or even in our earlier TI4 days, and maybe this is when we were worse or something, but being able to be like, ah, that person looks scary. Let's make a big deal about it. That used to work.
Yeah.
Our philosophy on Hakan used to be like, no, come into the game and put a rule down. And we did that like
right.
two or three games in a row.
Right. That seems excessive now. And, like,
and now it's like, how would you ever do that? How right. could you ever just point a finger at someone and be like, don't let them get away with anything? But like that used to be our number one play, and I never see it work anymore.
I think people are going to have to be really comfortable with alliances shifting like
yeah.
Out of necessity. I think like there's just going to have to be a point where people are like, you know what? This has got to be over. Because look at what is happening
right.
on the other side of the
and
table.
And I don't think you can ever give people an inch. Like, you can't
yeah.
you can't let them
well,
get
I mean,
away
if,
with that.
If
Could
the,
I have
if
gotten
that too...
through to you at any point?
Yeah, you thought I was on this hellbent path to
it
stop
felt
you,
like it.
And I was not. But you had where my objectives were. The big thing with that beta wormhole is I needed to be adjacent to a home system, and Sean's wasn't a viable option. So I kept trying to just get that. I wanted my thing. I didn't want you sitting next to my home system. You brought your flagship adjacent to my home system.
Right.
Didn't need that. And I needed to be adjacent to your home system. So we were bouncing back and forth off each other. Those are the only systems I was trying to take. And then when I needed to take Saudor, I was just trying to get a sixth planet. And that's the only one I had in range. So it's another situation of sometimes, and I do get this with some players where it's like, you have the objectives I need. You're the one I'm invading because you have the objectives I need.
There's just no way
around
it.
And it's, I would have had the six planets if I'd been able to keep Mechatol, but that blew up in my face. And then
weird.
It became a really tough problem to solve.
It's weird sometimes where it just feels like if somebody's game goes bad, it like causes all, it's almost like globalism, like economic stuff. Like one country has like a economic collapse, but then that has all these ripple effects, all these other economies across the world.
There's only X amount of GDP in the world.
Right,
But that is one of my new favorite things about this map. And this isn't us tooting our horn. It's like this map took a lot of work with working with other people to make it all work as well.
Mm-hmm.
But my issues in this game, it pointed out that like there really are no planet control objectives that are, because I needed just six planets, but nobody has six planets in your slice. You just don't have it, so you gotta.
But you only need one.
You only need one, and the same thing with most traits. You need one or two planets, and you need tech specs. That's obviously always the hard one. But like even the six planets, where in some games it's like, oh cool, we're like all doing this, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
On this map, even that you gotta do something uncomfortable,
right?
And so you need to find a way to make it not hurt.
Okay, well, do we want to get goofy now and talk about this
stupid
game? So
this is the serious part of the podcast is over. We're done. It's time to listen to Hunter, Sean, Chris, and EJ's Complain-a-thon hour, and Matt's going to just listen in with you. I'm going to moderate a discussion about the last 5.5 hours that these four had and how terrible it was.
So if you haven't watched it, we played two games. We did so much for you, and... I don't know. I guess at this point, I don't really know if they will be up on YouTube.
They'll be up on YouTube.
Okay. So there's two games.
As long
there
as
was
the
one
files
we just
corrupted.
Well, okay. So knock on wood there. The first game we just talked about, serious game. The second game, let's do a quick rundown of every wackadoodle concept.
Yeah. And so we talked about this last week, but we'll go over it real quickly again. We did. The map was made by In Map We Trust. If you listen to last week's episode, we actually didn't do the map we talked about. He wasn't liking it. He was realizing it was going to actually lead to a very, like, stally... Things were too far away from each other in the first map, the multi-galaxy thing. And he was like, I don't like it because it's going to actually lead to you guys having, like, a boring game. It won't be interesting to watch. So he gave us a regular-shaped map, but the home systems were all pushed in one. So all of the home systems were in the second ring in where the normal equidistant tiles go. So there was going to be
that
to
right
deal
there
with.
Was insane.
That was that enough. That would have been enough to be a crazy game, and we should have just stopped there.
Yeah,
because that would have been an insane game.
Well, I don't know if we should have, but
regardless, we also did audience agendas, which is where the viewers vote on things that these crazy, stupid agendas we've come up with.
We did two per round.
We did two per round.
I didn't even know that was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I guess we talked about that, but, like, then once we started...
It just seemed like a must. So, well, the biggest thing is there are plenty in there that are not as big of a deal, but we started with, like, the craziest one to get. We got the first audience agenda that came out forced everybody to stop picking strategy cards for themselves and instead pick strategy cards for the people across the table.
So stupid.
Which meant you now are not in control of your own strategy. It was a disaster.
So you're, like, looking at... Like, I was, like, the whole game I was looking across at Connor, and we were just trying to make sure... that we were getting the things for each other.
Right.
Yeah.
It worked out in a weird way, though, because you guys ended up doing that. You had these weird bonds with the person across from
except
you.
For the round,
like,
except for the round where I yelled at everybody.
Except for the round where I tried to kill my partner.
It's like, I'm going to end
so
you.
So the other rules we played with were the audience voted on every objective that came out. So the objectives were even harder to do because, all the audience...
They were all
do
as hard as possible.
Yeah, like every agenda was as hard as it could possibly have been. And... What are the rules?
Lots of audience agendas.
We did a tiered
so
agenda.
Even on top of the audience agendas, we did Alex's tiered
agenda list.
Agenda.
So we have a list of
agendas
that you do before Mechatol Rex is taken, which are like the really boring ones that nobody likes. We talked about this in the agendas episode.
Yeah.
But the ones that are like minister of whatever or research team whatever, those are all in the first round phase. Second phase is like all about victory points and crazy stuff that like people will be duking it out over all game. Mm-hmm. And then everything else gets put into the third one.
Which is when
stage twos come out. So the phase two is when Mechatol Rex is taken, and phase three is when stage two objectives are revealed.
Yeah.
That was
I think part of another aspect of it that made it kind of buck wild, because really a lot of the agendas that we were doing just in the game were crazy
impactful.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the audience was just poking and prodding us like we were little rats in a maze to them. And they never let up.
So they always
picked the most annoying thing they could possibly pick. No matter how much I pleaded with them or asked them nicely or looked right into the camera.
And all EJ had to do was wear a Canadiens jersey, and he had him on his side every time.
Also, I brought the hype.
That's true, you did bring the hype.
They were on my side the first game. I loved it.
That's true. They were with everyone, because
Sean was adjacent to me, and the story of Sean is historically that he was going to mess me up. And so the stream was immediately like, cool, Sean. Hey, let's tell you what to do.
Yeah.
But let's talk more about... I'm curious. I want each of you to tell me your highlight of game two. Because all of you spent most of the game just like in pure turmoil and hatred for it in a fun way. For me, I mean, I thought it was hilarious. And the stream was having fun with it.
I hope it's funny. I have no idea. I don't even know what all I maybe said.
It's so hard to know where.
So Hunter, do you have a highlight of game?
Oh,
two?
I know exactly. Because it was when I was still very connected to playing the game properly.
Right.
Because that's the real story here is that there were lots of parts
the game
of the
took
game.
A turn.
Yeah, I mean there were
we'll
lots
get to
of
that.
Points
we'll get to
where,
that, though.
Yeah. But I think the best thing that I did was, so, you know, this map was really messed up with the home systems, and the first objective that they picked was the most annoying one they possibly could have picked, which was occupy two systems next to Mechatol Rex, essentially.
Which was where everyone was next to.
Right,
so
everybody was already next to it.
The most amount of conflict.
Yeah, so it was like...
Oh, and those were the six best systems. That's like Aaron M. or Baron Bloodfort, Bisfree. It's all of that stuff.
And so I just agonized over it. And I got construction, which at first I thought I had maybe made a mistake, but it ended up not being a mistake at all. But I like moved half of my ships to just occupy a space first. Mm-hmm. Like I focused on occupying the one spot and then was able to warfare and build another fleet and then take the other planets. I just had to give up the idea of taking a bunch of planets in one go.
Right.
But I blocked, like, I was the only one that claimed that, and I blocked it for a really long time.
Right. And nobody got very many planets. Most of the game.
Yeah.
That was, like, the story. At least for the first three rounds, I remember, like, I was the one handing out the planet cards, and I was like, my deck of planet cards is still very thick.
Right.
In round, like, three.
There was also a round where no one scored.
Right.
That was interesting.
That was interesting. That was fun.
I
That's
had
a
nine
fun way
planets
to
going into the final round.
Wow.
Hmm. I was the only person that had any... No one would take them from me. but that's because he left my slice. And so I had...
Sean?
Like
okay, yeah,
planets.
We need... Yeah, we are.
Hang on. Sean, do you have a highlight from game two? You had the most interesting game of all, Clan of Sar.
My highlight was... God, Connor gets me with his wheeling and dealing every time. Or just like... I believe him too much. Because he offered me two cards, and I should have just taken support for the throne, but I didn't.
Because he said he was going to give it to you later, and then he never did.
Because
broke promises. That was the first game I ever played where people were breaking promises, and it was because we were just so stressed out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when I was going to attack, when I had the first thing where I was going to used my double logistics thing or whatever, and I was going at Connor, and then he was like, I'll give you victory point. I was like, great. And that was when I first realized, oh, I'm so close to everybody's home systems.
And I have a big Sar ball.
I can just go from door to door collecting everyone's support the throne.
Yeah. That was my favorite realization
of
the game.
And then I just turned around and took Will's home planet.
Yeah.
Just Book of Mormon, yeah. The whole thing.
It very quickly became a story of, is Sean actually going to do that? And then you decided to go for an Outer Rim thing. But yeah, I think that's my highlight watching was when Sean was like, I'm going to take everyone's home system unless you give me support for the throne. Right. And I'll see how many I can get. I might get 5 points, and that's halfway there, bud.
For the sake of clarity, though, I just want to real quick just go do a big faction lineup real quick because we did not actually cover that. So I was playing Necro. Sean was playing Klanisar. Chris was playing
Extra.
EJ was playing. Yes. And then Connor was playing
Sardaknor.
And Will Loader.
L1Z1.
Was L1.
Chris, highlight?
I think my highlight was probably the PDS2 round one.
That was dope.
I just enjoyed doing
that.
Yeah,
just getting that. Well, and on that slice, I mean, that put you in this crazy position of just like, we all need to be at each other's throats, but no one gets to be at Chris's throat. Nobody gets to do anything to Chris.
If anyone would come on Chris's doorstep and try to get in his house, it would have been...
Right.
Man, it would have been real rough, just a real tough road for them to get in there, wouldn't it?
And what I love, this was another thing that was fun.
Out.
There were so many times where I wasn't being able to keep up with like who was activating what, but Chris definitely was, because every time someone would activate his system, he would already be over by the dice tray just like rolling 6 dice for PDS. Here we go. All right. And they, like, the person's still moving their ships in, and he's just like, well, we're going to see what I get.
Yeah.
And like that would happen 4 or 5 times around.
Yeah, I knew for some reason because of the shape of the map that it was going to be a big PDS like thingy.
EJ Sanders.
I don't remember most of the game.
EJ's highlight was just screaming much. It was a few.
You got War Sons.
Yeah.
You got.
I accomplished my goal. That was fun. My highlight was. Was really the thing we were about to talk about. It was the thing at the end of the game when everybody had
when it took a turn.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the turn then?
Let's get into it.
I'd like to do it kind of like what we just did
and
say the moment where we realized
that
was what the game was going to be.
The moment that broke you the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the turn is people rebelling against the stream. And against the concept of the game we were even playing. Hunter, when did you decide to just stop playing their game and start playing your own game?
I just got really upset about all the it's not even so much that there was one... Oh, you know what? I know exactly what it was. Because I was getting pretty upset at the just sheer heaviness of all of the different agendas. There was this agenda called Calvin's Ball, where we would throw this ball around and it would allow us to copy each other's faction abilities. There was the Necronomicon that allowed people to pass around this thing and possibly endlessly stall with it.
And take tech.
And take tech. And with both of these things, Calvin's Ball, whoever wrote that one was smart and made it where you had to use it.
Yeah.
But with Necronomicon, I just wanted us to not use it because I was so sick of the audience's agendas, because it just felt like they were always here's what it is. They took my flagship. I had the Necro flagship sitting on a slice right next to my home system, and I had, which is, by the way, the Necro flagship is my favorite ship. It's my favorite ship in the whole game.
Right.
It's my favorite ability in the whole game. Right. I just think it's so cool. It's not even that flashy. It's just like fun.
Really good.
Yeah, because
What did they do to your flagship?
So there was a agenda that came out called Cosmic something. Who cares what it was? But what they did was you were to pick two.
You picked one system, and that system was going to swap positions on the map with its equidistant system. So whatever was on the opposite side of the map would become in the same position.
And they picked mine.
They picked. What they specifically did is, it just so happened that Ghost's flagship, no, not Ghost's, mm-hmm. was it yours?
Yeah, it was.
Ghost's flagship was on the opposite side, so they were like, oh, we can swap those two flagships with each other. Wouldn't that be hilarious? And it just so happened to put Hunter's flagship completely surrounded by huge fleets belonging to every other player in the game.
Yeah.
There was never, he wouldn't be able to do an attack and have anywhere safe to retreat to. Was just trapped.
Locked down that fleet, and it was my favorite ship, and it locked it down, and I just felt like targeted and intimidated.
Right.
And I just realized that I would just get started giving a little pushback. And I mean, I think if it had kept going on like that, you know, I think I would have found out where everybody lived and beat them up.
Sean, what was the moment for you where you decided I'm done letting this audience play against us? I'm in open rebellion.
Well, actually, I think the moment that I turned to open rebellion was a normal mechanic in the game. I don't think it was an audience agenda.
Okay.
It was when we cut this fleet supply down. I was just it's impossible.
Your whole strategy relied on one big scary Sarball just stomping around the map, and the players themselves were voting to put you at 4 fleet supply for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that I'd never. I mean, maybe that's been talked about before, but I hadn't connected that before. That fleet supply agenda really messes up. Sorry,
8 fleet supply.
Yeah, and nobody else was, I think, even at or above 4.
Like
nobody else lost anything, and he lost 4 command counters and some ships and the ability to do what he was doing.
Yep.
Because it wouldn't have been a big deal if it was like go down and then I just put more back in.
Right.
Like that, I could have. I would have been like, okay, I'll just sit here for a little bit and do it.
And build back
and, like,
up.
And figure it out.
But you had to completely change your game plan.
Okay, well, now I'm trapped next, like behind the person who has the perfect ability to defend
themselves. You got
trapped
by
extra. I'm trapped in behind them now.
Yeah.
And
where did that lead, Sean?
That led to me just doing what I just... Trying
just
to
pushing against kamikazing against
to
it.
Make it just trying to make it happen.
Yeah, it did not. Sean got eliminated as the Clan of Sar. Fully eliminated. To the point where what did Will do and say at one point?
Will kind of zoned out, I think, on the game in general and just kind of zoned in on
Will. I love the dynamic between Will and I in that game because when I turned away from Connor, I took Will's home system.
Right. And he never forgave you.
I was sitting right next to him. He had, I think he was fine. I think he was like, at the end of the day, he was just kind of like, it's a game, whatever.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's silly.
Well, that was probably his moment of giving up on the game and the idea of the game was like, I no longer care about this victory point thing because there's no way to even do it.
Right.
My new goal is to take Lodor as many times as possible and destroy Sean. I want him eliminated. So, like, Will got all of his victories.
Yeah, it took Lodor almost 3 times.
Yeah, he almost got a 3rd time, and he did, in fact, eliminate Sean.
Let's be clear, too. What we played was not Twilight Imperium.
No, not at all. Goodness, no. Chris, what was your... Actually, you kind of play. You just kind of kept playing. I don't know. You got to a certain point where all you were doing was firing PDS at everybody.
Yeah, there was a part where I kind of gave up just on my own because I sort of made a mistake, but it was like a fatigue thing.
Yeah.
So I had.
Are you talking about the ceasefire thing?
Perhaps. I had the Sarball right behind me, as he had mentioned, and so we would just kind of go back and forth where I would PDS him for a lot. I had the Xcha flagship and all these PDS, and so I'd whittle him down, but then on his turn, somehow he had some kind of engine to just keep regenerating his Sarball.
Right.
And so I got tired of it at one point and just went ahead and got him close enough that I was like, maybe I can send my flagship in and just put a stop to it. And I don't think the odds were in my favor, probably, but I did end up losing that flagship, and my home system was pretty empty. Then I think this is where the ceasefire comes into play.
Yeah.
Because that opened up my home system to the Necro to be able to come in and take a planet in my home system. But also, that was for a victory point. That wasn't just like a thing to do.
It was for 2 victory points. And the conversation was essentially, Chris, if you do not utilize this ceasefire against Hunter, the game will end sooner.
Mm. Yep.
And you both really and you both argument. Were like, yep, that's what that's the game we're playing now. The game now. Now, I want to applaud you all for not chasing the instinct on just giving all your support for the Thrones to Hunter, because that was genuinely considered at one point.
That was talked about.
That was talked about. You and you, you took this. The honorable way out. You took the honorable way out of enduring and still racing for victory. Before we get into a bunch of that stuff, I do want to get EJ's.
Yeah.
EJ, did you give up immediately? It felt like you gave up basically immediately.
Did you see the map? It was almost immediate. What was weird was I was holding off the rebellion the longest. Also, I think I was just I felt I needed to play a chaotic character, in that game because it was all chaos.
I think what
anyways.
Sealed the deal was when the agenda came out that intrinsically linked your home system to Mechatol Rex.
That was
all game. But the ghost home system was adjacent to Mechatol Rex.
But then following that. Making the ghost home system adjacent to Mechatol Rex. So this is what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. The part where I really turned against the game was, again, not an agenda that the audience had.
Right.
That was the agenda that set up the reason I wanted to almost quit, was because there was an agenda later on where we roll the die to see if of my stuff was just going
Ixthian
to die.
Ixthian Artifact. Luckily, the die gave him tech, but Ixthian Artifact did get voted for, and so Mechatol Rex had the risk of getting nuked. All the systems adjacent to Mechatol Rex were going to lose 3 ships. And for the audience agenda's fault, that also included EJ's home system. He
right.
would have lost 3 ships in it. But he got lucky on that front. But yeah, that I remember that being a moment where you were just like, "This, there is no meaning to any of this, and I can't control anything besides finding a way to stop the game as fast as possible."
Yes.
Now, Connor's not here, and I really wish he was, because I want to... He's the only one who I felt like was completely zoned into the game the whole time, and he never gave up on it.
Yeah.
He truly wanted to win, and he was pushing for it really hard, especially in that last round when it was kind of like, it looks like it's going to be Hunter's again. He was like the only one really, really trying to find a way, because he was in striking distance and he wanted a win very badly.
Right.
Connor hated the chaos more than anybody.
Yeah.
Oh,
he
really wanted to just be playing a good game, and yeah, he spent most of the game just sitting silently.
Connor
and
legitimately
mad.
Rolled his eye. I watched Connor that game. Yeah. I don't remember much about the game. I remember Connor's facial expressions and just his disgust with every audience agenda that got read.
He was bad.
Great. And then he would just move on like it didn't exist. And that was my favorite thing that Connor did all day, was just every time one would come up, he would go, "Yeah, sure, perfect, great." And then he would just like throw a command counter on the board, and I would be like, "Connor, I love you. Just come here. Come get a hug." And he's like, "No, I'm focused."
Yeah, he wanted it. He wanted to win the chaos game.
I forgot about... Actually, I would like... I motioned at Hunter. I don't know if he got what I was saying.
No, I remember. No, I know. I know what
Sean's
your favorite,
favorite moment
was.
This game was actually not taking... Because that was pre-getting high off of audience participation. But I got... Chris and
Chris and me
and Hunter
and EJ
to swap ceasefires.
Oh my god! I got
Chris and EJ to swap.
Okay, Sean had trade.
No, it didn't actually end up happening.
It didn't, but
swap.
Well, it almost. It was very close to happening.
I wanted you to be right.
And he replenished Connor. And he replenished Will, and they did some trading business. And then one of you three, I think it was Hunter, was the first one to be like, "Can I replenish?" And you were kind of—it was almost like a joke. It was like, "Hey,
everyone
but what about
was
me?
Playing really fast and loose with replenishing commodities."
Right. Well, Will was playing fast and loose.
Yeah.
So you hit up Sean. You were just like, "What would it take? What? How can I replenish my commodities?" Yeah. And Sean's first thought was, "If you and Chris swap ceasefires," and you went, "Wait, what? Really?" And he was like, "Yeah, if you swap your ceasefires, I'll replenish you." Which, of course, you replenish, and then later on your own turn is when you would have to do the ceasefire swap. So it was a non-binding thing.
We still did it.
And then EJ was like, "How can I get in on this?" And Sean was like, "If EJ and Chris swap promissory notes." Which meant Chris giving EJ Hunter's ceasefire. So who would have, by the end, who was supposed to have whose ceasefire?
Hunter was supposed to have Chris's, Chris was supposed to have mine, I was supposed to have Hunter's.
Yep.
That was Sean's big
that was
goal.
His big play.
And Hunter and Chris did end up swapping ceasefires, right?
Right.
But then the second one never actually happened. Yeah. But
it got close. I really just wanted to follow through on the plan just because I'm a man of my word.
This is how stupid this game got. I mean,
I wanted Hunter's ceasefire real bad. But you needed
great.
It.
Yeah, I don't. You gotta watch it honestly to believe it. It's only a 5.5. It's you all commented on this. It was only a 5.5 hour long game.
It was so long.
And you
no
all
way.
Acted like it was 48 hours.
Because it had the level of complexity of like late game TI.
The whole time.
The whole time. That's why it was exhausting.
It was that, and it was also the fact that it's kind of like a long car ride to a place you've never been.
Right.
You'd never know how long it takes to get there.
Yeah.
Like
the nobody knew. You were, I think for most of the game, you were all convinced that this game was going to go...
Till now.
Till the end. Well, till now, but what I even mean is, round-wise, no one was going to get the points. Because there were three rounds where it was like barely anyone was getting any points. So there was a moment where a lot of you guys were like, we're not going to, no one's going to win by getting to 10 points. We're going to reveal the ninth, or the final objective.
I mean,
that
was win at three.
Yeah.
Or five.
But it eventually turned around, especially when the stage twos came out. But I remember you all being like, what they were just saying is there is no end in sight, and that makes every second feel longer.
It felt hopeless at times. It was just watch it. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. It was really like I hope it's funny for people.
It's funny for me.
It was so stressful. It was like very painful in my brain space, and it was like sometimes it was funny. But I feel like I played a game of Twilight Imperium with everyone that listens to the show, and I feel really salty about it. And I'm still kind of mad. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to be okay, me and you, the listener. But, like, I need a little bit of space. Because they never let up.
They never let up.
They took away all of our promissory notes at one point.
Yeah.
They took them all away.
And we all were like...
And voting. Almost like every mechanic of the game got changed.
Yeah, they were like, and now you all have one vote and the speaker has two. And
yeah, like nothing, by the end of it, nothing about it resembled normal Twilight Imperium. No. And I just can't believe that you guys didn't like take it easy on us after a little while at all. That you just would have kept poking and prodding.
I want to know actually how many people were there, because there weren't very many by the end, right? Like how
voting wise, we were getting fewer votes. I mean, it was getting late, and it was the long slog was taken over.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the future, my plans for these crazy streams, I think we did do too many things at once, and here are the things that were too much. And I think more than anything else, is that you guys did this crazy game after playing an entire game of Twilight Imperium.
Right.
So you were all already exhausted and then asked to do this very, very exhausting thing.
Yeah.
So that, you guys were already in trouble. And so my other big thing, and I said this earlier, is I think the map combined with all the audience agendas was too much. The audience agendas are almost predicated on the idea that this is going to be a normal map and most of the other rules are going to be normal.
Right.
It's just that now we're throwing, you know, a wrench in the gears. But with the map too, like I said, I think just playing on that map would have been enough for a crazy game.
Yeah.
Sean would have made a lot of the same decisions with just the map alone.
Mm-hmm.
Sean would have seen he's so close to everyone's home systems. I'm just going to take everybody's home system and get support for the Thrones to not do it. I think all that stuff still would have happened, and crazy decisions still would have been made, and we wouldn't have had all the things where it's just like, oh, Hunter doesn't get to use his flagship anymore. Oh, you don't get to have this anymore. Oh, you don't get to vote anymore. Like,
oh,
so many things.
We have to pick the strategy cards for each other.
Yeah.
I could not get over how stupid that felt and how that just... I'm not trying to be critical of whoever wrote that agenda.
Based off of a TI3,
a
normal agenda.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably because it never got drawn, because in TI3 there were about 400 agendas.
Well, there's a million agendas, and I don't remember if it was for only one round or was it constant. It may have been a constant thing.
I think it was a constant,
pick for somebody else. I don't remember who it was, if it was like the next player in order or whatever, but there was an agenda in TI3 that made you pick someone else.
I mean, I'm not even trying to criticize that person, because they succeeded. Like, if they succeeded, whoever wrote that, in making the game feel very different and making it feel wackadoodle and like silly, stupid.
Right.
Like
it
taking
worked.
Politics and handing it to the person across the table.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like
giving the speaker token.
Speaker token,
making someone else the speaker so that because
you
they are going to pick
thing.
For you.
Right.
So like you need them to be speaker, not you. You don't need to be speaker. You almost never needed to be speaker.
Right.
Right. It's a mess. It was an absolute mess, and I loved every second of it.
Yeah, it was a dumpster fire.
Matt is a masochist.
No, I'm a sadist. I put that on all of you.
I will say this stream in particular, I don't know if they're going to be separated in the end. I hope
they
are.
There'll be two videos.
Yeah, so that last one is the Rowdy Boy episode for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Rated M for mature.
Yeah, there's curses. There's bad words.
There's
in these.
Many curses. Yeah.
Threats.
And bad attitudes, too.
Yeah.
And then, like, also the people just start laughing. Sometimes people start singing. It's literally like we probably.
I believe I can fly.
Yeah, it goes from like hopeless to like.
Oh, we went through the stages of grief.
It's like
right.
Real bad. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad. Acceptance was us ending the game and being like, "Well, we did it."
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think we're gonna wrap it up there. I think that's enough for that. Please go watch those streams. They are.
Getting
insane.
Eliminated was cool.
Yeah,
Sean got eliminated.
Sean hugged and thanked Will for eliminating him. That's the highlight. Go watch the game so you can see why and how Sean was led to giving a hug to Will for eliminating him. Thank you so much, Will. I love you for eliminating me and saving me from this.
I think it's the
place.
Worst game of Twilight Imperium that you can see out there.
There were three people at the table actively trying to get eliminated.
Right. But also, it's probably unlike any. Well, it's for sure unlike any TI stream.
Well, we did have one person in chat specifically say, "I can't do this anymore. I can't watch this anymore. It is too insane. It's too crazy."
I wish I could have too.
Yeah.
So much of me wanted to just go, and I really do feel like this one more than any others is a Christmas gift to you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for giving me my Christmas gift.
Merry Christmas, and that's you better like it.
Yeah. Double up. Happy birthday, too.
No, you still have to get me a birthday present. All right. We're going to go.
No, I mean, that feels kind of sudden.
So, do you think it feels sudden?
How what time is it now?
It's 12:45.
Shit.
Thank you for listening to Space Cats Peace Turtles, and thanks to Ben Prunty for the use of his music. You can find more at benpruntymusic.com and benprunty.bandcamp.com. Pax Magnifica, Bellum Gloriosum.